From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
Here is the story of Netflix that you know. So, there was a time when Blockbuster was the dominant movie rental company in America, and then Netflix came along with this crazy genius idea of mailing DVDs right to your door. It was simple and disruptive and just so damn clever that it was destined to work. And it did. It blew Blockbuster out of the water, just changed the entire industry. Boom. But you know, that story leaves out something critical. Netflix was not a foregone conclusion. It was slow going at first. It was hard. It was not succeeding. And so one day, Netflix's co-founder and CEO was hard at work when someone came to visit him.
I was working in my office. Maybe it was 5 or 6 o'clock at night.
That's Mark Randolph, one of the two men responsible for Netflix. Mark had co-founded the company in 1997 and served as its CEO. And he co-founded it with a guy named Reed Hastings. Mark and Reed had worked together at another company and came up with the idea of Netflix together, but they'd contribute to it very differently. The plan was that Mark would be CEO and Reed wanted to be an investor. So Mark ran the company and Reed was Netflix's biggest investor and advisor. That was the plan, and that's what happened for the company's first 2 years. But that was about to change, because you know who was at the door that evening, there to visit Mark? It was Reed.
Reed came back from some meetings he had had over the hill in San Jose, and came into my office and closed the door and flipped open a Mac and a PC rather and began running me through a PowerPoint. And at first, I couldn't quite understand what was happening. But what I realized eventually is that he was starting to make the case that the company might be stronger were he to come in as CEO.
Not long before this, Mark and Reed had been out fundraising together, and they were looking deep into Netflix's numbers. And the thing was, the numbers were not adding up. They saw it clearly. The company was young. It had just 20 or so employees at the time, but it was just not on a path to sustainability. Something needed to change. They both knew it, but they had very different ideas of what that meant. Mark, you know, he was the CEO, so he thought that change meant that he'd have to double his efforts and work harder and smarter and make some changes inside the company. But Reed had a different idea of change. To Reed, change meant that it was time to change CEOs. And so here was Reed in Mark's office, giving a PowerPoint presentation to convince Mark to step aside and allow Reed to take over as CEO, which is kind of a weird way to demote someone, right?
Most times, I think you would think that the way that you would start is by saying, you know, listen, we have to have a really serious talk. And then the next thing you would say is, I think that I should be CEO. And then you would try to justify it. But this, in fact, is not that. You didn't really know what he was saying to you until a little bit into it.
Because Reed was building a shit sandwich, and it's something that largely I had shown him earlier how to do in delivering some bad news in another circumstance, but it's largely one where you basically insulate the difficult message in between two pleasant messages. So first you lay down that first piece of bread about all the great things someone's done. Then you jump into putting down the shit, which is here's what's not good. And then you close with that second piece of bread about, but of course, here's all the positive benefits that will come.
Okay, can you imagine being Mark in this position? Imagine founding a company with someone, being the CEO of that company, and then having that person walk into your office and show you a PowerPoint presentation about how they'd be a better CEO than you. Imagine that. How would you react? I think most of us would just lose our minds. But that is not what Mark did. Mark made a more rational decision. It was a hard, gutting, embarrassing decision. Mark stepped aside. And the result is that Netflix is one of the greatest business success stories of our generation. You know who generally gets credit for that? It's Reed. Reed is still the CEO of Netflix today. And Mark, get this, is really happy about how it all worked out. Mark has a new book about the founding of Netflix. It's called That Will Never Work, and it tells the entire tale. But on this episode of Problem Solvers, we are going to dive deep into this singular moment. It was certainly one of the most critical moments in Netflix's history, as well as one of the most critical moments in Mark Randolph's life. And it contains lessons for all entrepreneurs, regardless of what it is you're building. Because sometimes it all comes down to a big, difficult question. Is what's best for me also best for the company? And sometimes the answer is no. We'll get into it all right after the break. Data. We talk about it on this show all the time. It can be the greatest tool that a business has, and that's why the most successful organizations and professionals are data-driven. But there's a problem here. As the volume of data that businesses have access to increases, they need to find more efficient ways to turn that data into actionable insight. And you know who solves that problem? iDashboards. iDashboards offers a comprehensive business intelligence solution to help you with data aggregation, preparation, analysis, visualization, and reporting. With the iDashboards Data Hub, you can blend data from multiple sources to get a comprehensive view of related data. Then, its intuitive dashboard builder gives anyone the freedom to create and design dashboards with no programming experience required. It's no wonder companies like Lockheed Martin, Michigan Humane Society, and Navy Federal Credit Union trust iDashboards to provide them with the data they need to make the best, most informed decisions for their business. So, check it out. To learn more, visit idashboards.com/problem. That's idashboards.com/problem. And now, our second sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by ClearBank. ClearBank is changing the way that entrepreneurs raise money with equity-free capital. The company was co-founded by Michelle Romano. She's a star on Dragon's Den, the Canadian version of Shark Tank, and she created it with her partner, Andrew D'Souza, after seeing how many companies were willing to part with precious equity in exchange for a bigger marketing budget. ClearBank believes that founders shouldn't give up a piece of their company to fund marketing and inventory expenses, which is why it makes equity-free investments ranging from $10,000 to $10 million and can get you a term sheet in less than 20 minutes. They charge a small flat fee for the capital, and you pay them back using a win-win rev share. ClearBank wants to be clear. This is not a loan. There is no interest rate, no personal guarantees, no credit checks, no financial covenants. In 2018, it invested $150 million, and it is on track to do $1 billion this year. So, if you were doing over $10,000 a month in revenue, find out how you can receive ClearBank capital by getting your 20-minute term sheet at clearbank.com/problem solvers. That's ClearBank, BANC.com/problem solvers. ClearBank, stop pitching and get back to doing what you love, growing your business. All right, we're back. And let's just pick up with where we left off a moment ago. Reed and Mark are in the office, and Reed is giving a PowerPoint presentation about why Mark should step down as CEO and allow Reed to take over the role.
I was mixed feelings of shock that he was doing this as I was realizing what was happening. Second, that I was a matter of pride going, wow, he's doing a pretty good job actually delivering this.
By the way, can we just pause to appreciate that? I had the same experience once. I was fired from a job, and while it was happening, I just kept thinking, huh, this guy is really good at firing people. Like, I was taking notes, like thinking, like, when it's my turn to fire someone, I hope I do it as straightforwardly and honest as this. Okay, back to Mark.
I remember at one point saying, Reed, I can't believe that you're coming in and proposing that you take over. And he says, no, no, you have the wrong impression. I'm not proposing I take over. I'm proposing that we run the company together, that he come in as CEO, that I be president, and that we do things jointly. And I think his point was that the company would be infinitely stronger with two people there full time working on it rather than one. And of course, eventually he put this, I mean, after a few minutes of me going, I am not going to have you deliver this news via PowerPoint. He put it away. And then we did have a great conversation.
After Reed left, Mark had a lot to think about. A life-changing decision had to be made.
I remember sitting in the dark for quite a long time while the office slowly shut down around me. And then eventually driving home and sitting out in my back porch with my wife, having a glass of wine and talking this through and recognizing that although incredibly painful and disappointing, that Reed was right, that it would be a stronger company with both of us running it.
For the record, no, I have no idea what that noise is in the background. That was on Mark's side. It sounds like someone's wrestling with a human-sized baking sheet. But anyway, when Mark said that he realized Reed was right, I immediately wondered, how did he come to that conclusion so fast? I mean, he was being asked to step down as CEO. That's the kind of thing people take years to recover from. And yet, after sitting in the dark at his office and then having some wine with his wife, he came to accept it just like that? How is it possible to get over something like this in a single night?
One of the reasons that I was able to, I think, make such a, in retrospect, amazingly good decision was first and foremost, I was 40 years old at the time. And so I was not in my 20s. I was not caught up in the ego of, look at me, Mr. Big Tech CEO. I'd had a fair amount of success in my career, and I had a reasonably mature view of my real strengths and weaknesses.
Okay, put a bookmark in that. We are coming back to it. Everyone should strive to have a reasonably mature view of their real strengths and weaknesses. But very few people do. But like I said, okay, more on that later.
And the second thing, I began to recognize that the dream that I had of myself as the CEO of a successful company now might have to be split into two dreams, and I was going to have to choose which one. Was the more important dream the me as the CEO part, or was the more important dream the big successful company?
Where's the glory, basically? Is it in the short term of being able to call yourself CEO? Or is it in the long term in having built something that lasts? Sometimes you cannot have both. Again, please pause to contemplate how rare and valuable this perspective is. Just imagine, for example, if politicians thought this way. Imagine if they were able to separate what's good for them with what's good for the country. Just imagine a world in which that actually happens. It's a better world, isn't it?
And I recognized that my obligation was that this dream wasn't just my own anymore. I had people who were working crazy hours, who were giving up personal time, who were being away from their families, all trying to make this dream come true. And it would be the ultimately most selfish act I could think of for me to subjugate the success that I owed them to serve my own ego. But the last thing I'll say toward that point is when you say, got over it in a single night, is of course untrue. I came to the realization that, yes, this is the right decision. But that's not to say that the next morning I woke up and zippity-doo-dah, clicking my heels on the way to work. Of course, this is something which takes a long emotional adjustment. But I came in recognizing that this, although painful, was ultimately the right thing and ultimately my obligation to work through whatever difficulties might lie ahead to make it work.
All right. So that's how he processed it internally. But soon he'd have to process it externally too. He'd have to actually stand in front of his staff, his peers, his investors, the world, and say he was stepping aside as CEO. And I wondered, how did he do that? And he had a long, thoughtful answer that goes far deeper than just dealing with this one difficult moment.
So I can't answer that question without talking a little bit about culture. Essentially, the culture at Netflix sprung not from a PowerPoint, not from some manufactured wisdom on paper, but it came from how Reed and I treated each other. And it was with brutal honesty. From the very moment we met, we'd say what we thought. We would say what we thought the other person was wrong if we thought they were. We'd make points. And then as soon as one of us realized the other was right, we'd have this egoless fall in and recognize, of course, that's the right solution. And culture is not what you say, it's what you do. And people model that. And that became the Netflix culture, which was radical honesty. And so the only way to present myself was not as something different, was to be very vulnerable and tell the company what was happening and why, how I felt, why I thought this was a good idea, what I would be struggling with, what we would have to figure out together as a company. But there was never any desire to sugarcoat it, to spin it. And what I've kind of realized, and this is something which is applicable to anybody, whether you're in a business or not, is that people know when you're full of crap. No matter how good you are at spinning things, people know. For example, one of the, you know, I talk a bunch in the book about decisions about firing people, and most people don't, or they do it so clumsily because they put in place performance improvement plans and they wait and wait and wait. And they think that no one's noticing what's going on. But of course, the person who's being laid off knows this performance improvement plan is a bunch of crap that is just setting him up for 6 months before he gets fired. And you know that. You're just documenting all the things that are wrong so you can do it more confidently. And of course, everyone who is in the company sees what's happening and they come to a totally different conclusion. And they say, either Mark doesn't see that this person's a total jackass, so he's blind, or he does see it and he's so weak he won't do anything about it. And so it's so much easier and so much simpler and so much more powerful just to say, here is what's really happening and here's what we're doing about it.
Today, Mark has no doubts about the wisdom of this decision. I mean, he says it clear as day.
The decision to step down as CEO and bring Reed in was probably the best decision I ever made at Netflix.
With Mark as CEO and Reed as president, they set the company on its path to success. The DVD rental business boomed with its all-you-can-eat, no due date, no late fee model. They were eventually able to have an IPO. The company grew and grew and grew. It was transformative. And within a few years, Mark looked around and had a shocking revelation. Although he was super proud of what Netflix had become, he didn't love being there anymore. Netflix was no longer a startup. It was a full-fledged industry giant, full of what Mark describes as phenomenal people whose skills and abilities far exceeded his. And now, remember how I said we were going to come back to this issue of discovering what your strengths and weaknesses are? Here is where that really crystallized for Mark.
I began to realize that although I deeply loved the company and I loved fighting the battles, I loved righting the wrongs and vanquishing the foes, I began to realize that it was no longer something that I loved doing. You can love the company, but not love the role you were playing in it. And it really did begin to dawn on me that what I truly loved was the early stages. And it turns out, now that I've left, it is what I love. And it is, I'll be immodest here, what I'm actually good at.
In retrospect, Mark had already given Netflix his greatest skill. He knew how to get a company through its early stages, how to establish a vision, identify an opportunity, bring together a team to make it happen, and just get through those really, really difficult early challenges. But as Netflix grew, it became something else. It needed someone with a different skill set, someone who knew how to really scale an operation. That would be Reed's skill set. This is why Netflix worked. It had the right person for the right phase of its life. And in the process, it taught Mark a lot about himself. So today, that's what Mark focuses on. Mark left Netflix in 2002, and he now functions mostly as a CEO coach or mentor for companies in their early stages. He is constantly offering his greatest asset. He knows his strength, and he loves it. And this got me to wondering, how often do entrepreneurs reach this kind of awareness? It is so valuable, but it strikes me as so rare and difficult to achieve. And you know, Mark has worked with tons of entrepreneurs, so I asked him.
How many people are really identifying, sometimes through kind of difficult challenges, what it is that they're good at? And how many people are fooling themselves and pushing themselves constantly into roles that they may not be suited for, but that they just, that they want to do because they feel like it's just the fulfillment of a vision of themselves?
Well, tragically, I think very few. I would not be proud of the decision I made if it was an easy or an obvious decision. And the fact is that the number of people who have successfully scaled a company from dream to post-IPO success, you probably could list on the fingers of two hands. And I put Reed in that category, of course, Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, but it's a small, small set. And most people, that process of no longer being CEO of the company they started ends up, unfortunately, being an involuntary one. And I've seen that more times than I like. Other times, because the founder is never comfortable stepping aside or believes his capabilities are beyond what he has, the company never achieves a success. So the answer, of course, is I think it's fairly rare.
What then advice would you have to entrepreneurs to find that thing that they're good at, even though it may not be the thing that they want it to be good at or that match the vision that they have for themselves? Or rather, if they're running a company, and what does it take to take such a hard look at yourself that you're able to make a very, very difficult and perhaps even embarrassing, but ultimately satisfying decision?
This starts at the beginning. And it's certainly, it comes up a lot in That Will Never Work, which is, why are we doing the things we do? And if people are doing this because they think they're going to be rich, not going to happen. If they think they're doing it because they're going to be famous, not going to happen. You have to do this because fundamentally you love solving problems. And you have to see that, as I talk about in the book, that fun, exciting period of building a company. And if that's not the part you like, you're going to hold on to something unreasonable. But once you've kind of accepted why you're doing this, ironically, it does become easier to accept that, wow, I just want to be a part of this. I do not need to be running it. I don't need to be the person in charge. I can look objectively at myself and say, what do I like and what am I good at? And if people are looking for what is success, that spending your day doing the things you love, that's success.
You know, at the beginning of this, I posed a question. It was this: is what's best for me also best for my company? It is a hard question to answer, but Mark just reframed that question. He just gave us all a very different way to look at it. So here it is. Do you want to be successful? If so, what does success look like to you? And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonfeifer.com, JasonFeifer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Feifer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.